Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host Mike Dempsey and Jeff Lagerman.
Hey, glad you're along, everybody. Happy Tuesday to you. A new week has embarked. Players have the day off today, but all eyes now turn towards the West Coast, the San Diego Chargers, and that's the venue where the Jags will try to break through and get their first win of the season, where Blake Bortles will make his starting debut in the National Football League. Let's talk good stuff today. Right?
Yeah,
we have plenty of stuff that we will pick apart over
because
the next
there is good
hours.
Stuff.
Well, and let's obviously it's going to start with the quarterback play in the second half, and Blake coming in 33 yards passing in the first half, 223 yards in the second half. Jeff, something I get asked a lot about, and I don't know the answer to this. Maybe you do. Is the play calling different based on Blake Bortles' skill set, or is he just taking advantage of elements of those plays where he's looking to get the ball downfield? Maybe he's creating a little bit more time in the pocket, and it's just his willingness to take those shots that maybe Chad Henne wasn't taking.
All right, I'll give you an apples-to-apples comparison.
Okay.
Okay? Chad Henne at Washington, naked bootleg, running out to his left. Okay? And you've got Arakpo and the middle linebacker coming off the edge, both of them, right? Chad Henne turns around and is immediately engulfed.
Right.
Sacked. Okay? Same exact play, different quarterback, Blake Bortles. You've got Eric Walden, and you have Josh McNary, the middle linebacker for the Indianapolis Colts, running the exact same defensive call. Blake Bortles turns around, and what does he do? He runs to the opposite side of the field, making both of those guys miss, and gets the completion to Will Tofoa. Apples to apples. That's the difference in the performance of a Chad Henne and a Blake Bortles.
That one was evident to see, because you could tell that's a play that Chad, and probably not a lot of quarterbacks in the NFL, are going to make athletically, right?
No.
To have the ability to withstand a little bit of contact, spin around, stay balanced, the whole nine yards. But here's the
difference, though, between an athletic quarterback who's young and an athletic quarterback like Blake Bortles. Most young athletic quarterbacks would have maybe made those two guys miss, but then the ball's tucked and they're running.
Right.
Well, he's running to avoid it, but still keeping his eyes down the field, and finds a guy that's not even in the pattern who has a little bit of awareness on what we call scramble rules. That's a new term for you guys. When the play breaks down and the routes are done, and now you have to do something as a quarterback and as a receiver, it's called scramble rules. Blake Bortles is going to be one of the most exciting players to watch through the rest of the season when it comes to scramble rules, which means the play gets off of the script.
It's backyard football at that point.
Exactly.
Right? I mean, you're just looking at your guy. Now you're looking for an open space. You're putting your hand up, and you're getting in your quarterback's sight line.
The completion to Allen Robinson across the middle. Remember when it was on top of Allen Robinson so fast?
Right.
You were like, wow, he made that catch.
My favorite throw of the game, yeah.
Okay. Allen Robinson wasn't running the right route. Okay. I don't think he had the correct route whatsoever. Another example, Allen Robinson another time was actually watching the inside wide receiver, Cecil Shorts. Okay, and Blake wanted to hit Cecil Shorts, and Allen Robinson had, I think, what was an ME on the play, mental error. And all of a sudden, Blake sees that Cecil's covered and turns and throws it to A-Rob, Allen Robinson, because Allen Robinson was kind of clueless over there, but he still said, okay, he's open, boom, I just throw it there.
Right.
You know, and sometimes as a quarterback, you want to run exactly to the script, but Blake has an innate ability with pocket presence and extending the play of making things happen when they get off the script.
How different, if at all? I mean, 30-0 at the half. The defense didn't stop Indianapolis, and I understand three and outs started to build up, but they weren't a problem, you know, in the first quarter. Certainly, at least I don't think it should be a problem in the first couple of drives. How much different if they start him in that football game? Is the entire flow of the game? I know it's an impossible question to accurately answer.
I don't know. I just think that I give Gus a lot of credit in that, you know, things had been so wrong all around the quarterback position. He almost felt obligated, you know, to give Chad Henne one more chance and to prepare both of those guys for the possibility that this could happen.
Right.
That we're going to make the switch. And I give Gus credit because it comes off as less panic and more intuitive, logical thinking. And I think the team accepts that in a better fashion than it would be if it's perceived as a panic type reaction. So both of those guys knew, okay, going into this game, Chad, you're the starter. You perform well, you stay in. If we're not doing anything offensively, we're going to look at making a change, and we want to make you aware of that. And I think it also showed, because Gus handled that with class and preparation, that the team reacted in a positive way. And I think that's big. I mean, that was the biggest decision that Gus Bradley has ever made as a head coach, period, bar none.
Oh, of course. You know, up till now. And Fred Taylor said after the game, he took a different point of view. He said he wouldn't have had that conversation with the starting quarterback because you're almost putting the seed in his mind that here it comes. You're getting the hook. And he's going to go out there and not play as freely. I tend to agree with you. He's been open about this process really from the beginning, really from before they even drafted Blake Bortles. When they signed Chad Henne, he knew what he was signing up for, and the possibility existed, the great likelihood that they were going to draft a quarterback. Didn't know if it would be third overall, but that chance existed that he's going to have to do something to hang on to his job. He's going to get every opportunity to do that. And I think that, like you said, that was, he felt it was such a circumstance with Washington that not many quarterbacks were going to have success with the way the pass rush was that day, and he just gave him that last half of football to kind of, you know, hold on to things, and be it.
The other thing, and I'll get to Fred's comment in a minute, the other thing that Gus was able to do was to tell the team that this change was being made. And I think players want one thing. They want to get treated with respect, and they want to get treated like men, which means being upfront and honest. They appreciate that more than anything. And I know that Fred played during – you know, an era here under Tom Coughlin where you didn't get the upfront communication. Now, he would never blow smoke up you, but there was just no communication. Tom would make a decision, and that was it. You know, he was the dictator,
right,
so to speak. You know, but players, I think, appreciate a coach that's upfront, honest, in black or white, no grays. And I think that in the long run, that pays dividends to a head coach, in my opinion. So I disagree with Fred. You know, and could that put more pressure on Chad Henne? Hey, look, he's a starting quarterback in the National Football League. Is there any more pressure than that? You know, just a conversation with the head coach saying, hey, look, we need you to perform. Otherwise, we may look at maybe making a switch to maybe get us our offensive spark. Come on. That's not going to impact Chad Henne. You know, it's not going to impact most guys that are playing that position, because most of those guys that are playing that position have pretty much a steel will anyway.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I didn't think it was a bad way to handle it. I thought it was consistent with what Gus has done all along and being upfront about it. And I think, you know, Blake has talked about it a little bit too. Said, hey, I appreciate the loyalty they've shown this guy, because when the times get tough with me, hopefully that's an indication they're going to stick with
me. That's right.
I think they're going to stick with him for quite a while.
He's the guy going forward. Unless there's an injury, that's it.
And the question now becomes how many years that is. You know, and you hope it's in the double digits at least.
Absolutely.
And that's a successful top of the draft. That's a good way to start. There are some positives coming out of the third loss of the season for the Jags. Obviously some bad stuff as well. We'll get to all of it. If you want to get in with the professor, Jeff Loggeman, 641-1010 is the way to do it here. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Loggeman, Fat Tony. Jaguars today just kicking off. We'll go through the film room. I know Jeff's broken it all down. Who performed maybe better than you thought? Who didn't live up to their expectations this week? And which guys may be in danger of losing some playing time? All that coming up over the next 2 hours. It's Jaguars today here on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, we got the Foo Fighters, Learn to Fly by Warren Brooks. Yesterday was
West Coast trip.
Piece of cake. That's what I'm thinking, right? West Coast?
You are incorrect. Good guess, though. I like it. Right out the gate.
Because the passing game was in full effect in the second
also
half.
Incorrect, but I like it as well.
Incorrect. All right, there you go. We'll leave it alone for now. Foo Fighters. Maybe we'll find out if the Jags have some fight in them in week 4 as they head out to San Diego. I don't know. But 641-1010 if you'd like to get on board. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Loggeman, Fat Tony here with you. I don't want to get to the negative quite yet. I want to talk about some other areas. What else? We know that Blake Bortles lit a spark for this football team. Who else met the challenge this week? How did the offensive line do compared to the first couple weeks?
I'll start with the two new guys, Luke Bowenko and Sam Young.
Okay.
Luke Bowenko, besides the one holding call that he got called for, I thought did an outstanding job. He's got a great athletic ability to wall off a linebacker, and we're going to show this on Jaguars.com film room Friday. I'm self-promoting here.
Absolutely. That's what we're here for.
Josh McNary, the linebacker, walks up as an eight-gap blitzer, which the Washington Redskins showed a lot, and the Jaguars had some issues with it in pass protection. As a center, when you have a shaded nose on one side and the other the linebacker walks up to your other shoulder, and you have to reach that linebacker after you snap the ball, it's a very difficult block.
What happens to the nose guard in that situation?
Brandon Linder.
That's the guard's responsibility.
Brandon Linder is coming all the way over.
Okay.
If the linebacker's not walked up, the center and the guard work together on the nose, and then eventually Bowenko goes up to that linebacker, Josh McNary. Well, that linebacker, like the old Chicago Bears, Brian Urlacher and Lance Briggs used to walk up in the double A-gap blitz. It's exactly kind of what it looked like, but it's instead of two backers, it's a nose and a backer. Bowenko just immediately takes the step, gets his hands on the guy, swings his hips around. He's out of the play immediately. That was Denard Robinson's one of the longest runs that he had in the game. He went right off of the rear end of Luke Bowenko. Boom, right up the chute. Outstanding block. His pass protection was good. His awareness was good. I don't think he had any misidentifications that I know of. I'm sure he probably did just because he's a young player. But that was a big improvement.
When you say misidentifications, you're talking about in terms of his responsibility, who he's supposed to be picking up or
what? When a center goes to the line of scrimmage, a center's job is to identify the mic, okay? And the mic could be, if you're playing the Jaguars, it could be Paul Posluszny. It could be Geno Hayes, or it could be a Telvin Smith. It just depends on,
the formation,
what the call is and what you're looking for in your protection. And if you don't set that protection, that's when you got what we call free runners. Free runners are guys that are unblocked and they're coming with a trail of smoke behind them to kill the quarterback.
Right.
And if the center doesn't identify the mic to set the protection, it can screw everybody up. And it appeared that Luke Bowenko, he's a Virginia guy now, had to get that in there, was very good on setting the protections. Did you ever see any free runners? I think there was one in the game that was a free runner. I don't know if that was on Luke Bowenko or that was just, you know, hot type of read that the quarterback had to adjust to. Again, I'm going to say this. You can watch all the film in the world, but unless you know the playbook,
right,
you don't know for sure. But it appeared that Luke Bowenko had a very good game, especially for his first start ever against a solid front. The Indianapolis Colts have some new guys that impressed me. Zach Kerr, I think, is a good football player. Josh Chapman, I think, is a very solid nose tackle. He had to match up against Corey Redding just like, I think, one time in a ball game, and Corey Redding is their best defensive football player. And he did very well. Physically, he wasn't overmatched. I'm excited about his future because he has the athleticism. He has the lateral movement. He has the smarts. And I think he's going to develop the one area that he might be a little bit behind is upper body strength, but that's going to build in time. That's going to build in time. At Virginia, we didn't have exactly the most prolific strength and conditioning program, except for when we had the great John Gamble as a strength coach.
Apparently, you need to maybe mimic what they got going on at BYU. I don't know. Just a thought.
Well, BYU, now you're talking about 22 and 23 and 24-year-old guys. I'll give you a story about that. In 1987, I remember we were bowl eligible. And we're going to play BYU in the All-American Bowl in Birmingham, Alabama. And so we show up for a big, reception, you know, for the bowl participants. And so the BYU players are there and the Virginia players are there. And I'll never forget walking in that reception and looking at some of the BYU players going, these guys have been shaving for 15 years. And look at them. I mean, they all look like
men. They got four kids.
They look like men.
Yeah.
Right? They look like men.
Because they are, because they went on a mission for 2 years.
Yeah.
They came back, they're married with two or three kids, man. That's how they do it out there.
So I remember that like it was yesterday.
How did Sam Young do?
Good. He had one pressure sack that he gave up, but he was physical. He was tough. He was relentless. I said it. Going all the way back, coming out of the preseason, I thought he had a chance to start opening week.
Yep.
And I thought that they would start him because Cam Bradfield had played so bad at left tackle. Now it was different. Left tackle against the Atlanta Falcons that I thought Sam Young would get the start because he played exceptionally well against the Falcons. They wanted to give Cam another chance. He failed. Sam Young is in there. I like Sam Young. He's still a very young player. Offensive linemen typically take time to develop. He's never going to have the ability to play left tackle. But I would never, even for 1 second, wince if he had to be my starting right tackle for a while.
There you go. Good stuff with a couple of new guys making a solid first impression. Let's get some phone calls going here at 641-1010. Butch got in first today. Butch, welcome to Jaguars Today. You're on Jeff Loggeman. How are you?
Good morning. Jeff, I know you probably remember this, and I know you remember it, but the time Steve Arnell, I was quarterbacking, and he was just like Chad got sacked and everything, and then they brought Mark in. Everything was just the same way almost. The crowd got into it, the players got into it, and you know what happened. So my belief is one man can make a big difference in a football team.
There's no doubt, and there's no position that can make a bigger difference on a football team than a quarterback position. And I've said this. I said it here last week. The difference between Chad Henne and Blake Bortles, and I like Chad. I think he's a great stand-up guy. He's tough. Great backup quarterback. Chad is as good as those around him. Blake Bortles makes those around him better. That's what you're looking for in the quarterback position, the one that can make players better.
What is it about him that makes players better?
He can extend the play. He makes quicker decisions. He has the athletic ability to avoid rush and make an offensive line better than it is, just like Peyton Manning's been doing for so long because he gets rid of the ball so quick. I think his demeanor in the huddle, not to say that Chad has a bad demeanor because I don't know that. I haven't been in the huddle with him. But he has the ability to uplift people around him. And when you talk to everybody about Blake Bortles in the preseason and you say, tell me about Blake Bortles, you know, interview question, post-game, in the locker room, just in conversation, the first thing that they go to every time, his demeanor. Remember Mercedes Lewis saying,
yep,
he's dope.
Okay? I do. I remember him telling you that, yes.
Okay, and
I was shocked you knew what that meant.
And much like the term slap, that can be a term of endearment or it can be a bad term. But Mercedes was using it in the text that it was a term of endearment and he had a lot of respect for him.
All right, Rashad, you're up next, 641-1010. You're on with the professor, Jeff Loggeman. What's up, Rashad?
Hey, what's going on, guys? I want to know, do you think that Dave Caldwell made a mistake by not targeting the free safety position in free agency? Because in Gus Bradley's defense, the free safety is pretty much the most important position on the defense because Cam Chancellor always played in the box to stop the run, and we don't have a rangy enough safety back there to get sideline to sideline. So I wanted to know, do you think that that was a mistake by not targeting that, and do you think they should target it in free agency this year and not take it off the air?
Thank you, Rashad. I think it's a great question because we were just discussing this position a moment ago off the air. Tell us what your thoughts are.
All right, so Guy Whimper Jr., the free safety.
that's what for folks who
are slip.
When you're talking with Dan Hicken, you refer to him as Guy Whimper Jr. We let
Winston
that slide.
Guy Jr.
Yes.
well, let me first say this. Cam Chancellor is a strong safety. Earl Thomas is a free safety. The Jaguars have a Cam Chancellor, and that's Jonathan Cyprian. What they need to find is the other pairing to that, and that's not easy to find. And as a general manager, you can't fix everything in 1 year. That's just the way it is. You fix the wide receiver position, at least you believe so. You fix the offensive line, the interior of the offensive line, at least you think you believe so.
Quarterback.
You fix the quarterback, it appears to be. Now, all this is, you have to say, it appears to be. You can't do everything in 1 year. Next year, and I truly believe this, safety, tight end, Leo, linebacker. Those four positions are going to be at a premium. Write it down. Those are the four positions they're going to be looking at next year.
What about offensive line? We've seen the offensive line struggle at times. I know Blanco and Young coming in, and Young will give way to Pastor, who they've been playing without, obviously, the starting right tackle. You know, it was such an eyesore, though. The first couple weeks of the season. Is this still a concern to you, or do you think with these new guys getting in there, once they get Pastor back and with the play of Bortles, maybe making quicker decisions, we're going to see a vastly improved line
of play? The latter.
The
latter. You know, the improved quarterback play, the less mental errors by the wide receiving group as a whole.
Should pare down as the year goes on.
Which will pare down. The running back position, getting comfortable running what is a new scheme for some of them. I mean, because you got Toby Gerhart with a new scheme. You have Denard Robinson who's still trying to figure out how to be a running back. I feel good about the offensive line. You know, I know Tony Boselli last night on Jaguars Monday was ripping the offensive line, particularly the left side. My glass is a little more half full than it is half empty on this offensive line, because if you look at it for what it is, the right tackle position, Sam Young had his fifth start in his career. Brandon Linder had his third start in his career. First start for Luke Bowenko. Left tackle Luke Jokel, that was his fourth start in his career at left tackle. Now, the guy that I won't give a pass for is Zane Beatles. He's got to be better. He's got a lot of games under his belt. He's veteran. He needs to be a rock amongst a lot of, I guess you could say, unknowns on that offensive line. He's got to be better.
What's going on with him? Is he getting physically pushed around? Is it technique? Is it mental errors? What is it?
Yes and yes and no. Okay, so,
okay, so technique and
technique and pushed strength. Around, yes. Mental errors, no. He's got to be better. He's got to be more physical. Now, the left guard position with the Jaguars offense is not one that has to be a mauler. That's typically the right guard position. But Zane Beatles has to be better, more firm at the line of scrimmage to help a center when they run games, et cetera, and also in the running game.
Let's bring it back to the original call here, Rashad, talking about that the safety position. Winston guys playing time in serious jeopardy. Is he one of these guys that we need to be watching out for?
Yes.
In terms of that?
Yes. Yes, I think his play and I think Dwayne Grotz are going to be addressed this week. Dwayne Grotz is a young, talented player, but he had some breakdowns this past week against Indianapolis. He had some breakdowns against the Washington Redskins. You know, and a lot of people want to talk about the tight ends and pin it on linebackers. Well, tight ends don't, you know, the Jaguars are a zone defense. The tight end can end up anywhere in a zone defense. He could end up in a corner's area, a safety's area, a linebacker's area. It doesn't matter. And Grotz and Winston Guy Jr., okay, I got that right that time, are partly to blame for some of that. The first 3rd and 8 against the Indianapolis Colts. Great opportunity. I mean, you'd love to have 3rd and 8 every time on 3rd down. It's a 5-man pressure. And when you play 5-man pressure in zone, you're typically a 3 under, 3 deep. So in other words, the corners and the safety are your 3 deep players.
The deep third of the field, right?
And then with the linebacker blitzing, you have 2 linebackers, then a safety to the 3 underneath people. When one of the core wide receivers, in other words, tight ends and running backs who are slot wide receiver, break out into the flat, okay, they have to expand their zone to the flat because the corner may be running off into that deep third area. First 3rd and 8, Winston Guy had a major eye violation. He's not even looking at Kobe Fleener. He's looking at the other side of the field for some reason. The guy that could threaten his zone first and foremost is Kobe Fleener. When Kobe Fleener comes off the line of scrimmage, you should approach the line of scrimmage to be able to attack him in your zone. If he flattens out, then you widen with him, let him make the completion, tackle him short of a 3rd and 8. Very simple. I mean, that's basic football. That's 1-on-1. He didn't get it done. He tackles him for a gain of 10.
Because he's looking in the wrong spot.
Yeah, man, that's just awareness. You know how Gus Bradley yesterday in his press conference was talking about teaching the system within the scheme, okay? That's a perfect example of that, of teaching a guy route awareness with a particular zone coverage or a particular coverage overall, of having the awareness of what you're supposed to do when the routes start to present themselves. And I think that's the unique thing about a Gus Bradley system, is that it's not overly complicated, so then you can really work the finer points of the defense and instruct on route combinations to know where you're supposed to be. And it makes the Seattle Seahawks what they are. The Seattle Seahawks, they run 4 coverages. That's about it. Against the Denver Broncos in the Super Bowl, you know how many coverages they ran 85% of the time? 2. 85% of the time they ran 2 coverages. And those 2 coverages, you could almost say they're the exact same thing. It's not like they fooled Peyton Manning. They took Peyton Manning to school because they played the route combinations, given the coverages that they had, and played them exceptionally tight. So it's not about coaching or play calling. A lot of times it's about execution.
It's about smarts, right, and understanding the concepts and not getting lost, I guess, when all of it's happening for real, right? I mean,
yeah.
It's one thing to be out there on the practice field and you go through these things and, you know, you make your mental errors. You get out there, it just seems like, you know, you always hear coaches talk about that one play. And that seems to be on that right there. You make that one simple play, and it's not even anything special.
Then you don't have the other.
Then you punt.
You don't have the other five plays, eight plays in the drive,
right,
in which the Indianapolis Colts took it down and scored, you know, was the first.
Right. You're forcing a three and out to open the football game. Yeah. It was a field goal to open things up. But
the other thing that kind of concerns me a little bit about Winston Guy Jr., I want to make sure I get that correct again, okay, is that a lot of times when he's breaking the huddle, lining up, you see the arms out, you know, like I got palms up, indicating
side.
What are we doing, okay?
Right.
How's our adjustments doing? Instead of being the one who's directing, and his eyes a lot of times are looking toward Jonathan Cyprien, okay?
Looking for instruction, kind of thing?
Possibly.
Okay.
When you break the huddle, you got to know what you're doing, make the communication, and that after that, your eyes are focused on the offense so that you can do your job, okay, and be ready for any. In your mind, you're not looking at a guy to know what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to be looking at the offense, thinking in your own mind, what are the possibilities based on this formation and this down and distance? If you can't get to that point in the National Football League because it's a game of precision, you're going to struggle. Right now, he's struggling.
What are their options right now if you look at this roster?
Josh Evans?
Is that what it would be? I mean, go to Josh Evans and then...
You know, and I don't know what's out there, you know, if there's anything available. I know that they had some guys that were in camp, I think, that were close. I mean, it was a tough decision at that safety spot. The guy that they
I think
had.
Loston went back on the practice squad.
Well, you got
right?
Craig Loston.
Up last week.
Up last week they released him to get the extra wide receiver. But you also had another safety that was a veteran guy that came over from the Carolina Panthers. What is his name? But anyway, he was here in camp. I'll have to brainstorm when we go to a commercial break to find out who it is. But he was a veteran guy, had a significant knee injury with the Carolina Panthers, was in training camp with the Jaguars, and I know that it was very close when it came down, at least to me, it appeared that it would be a tough decision whether he makes it or not.
641-1010, got to take a quick timeout. More of your calls with Jeff Loggeman here. This is Jaguars Today. We're live in the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field here on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, this is Guitar Short Old School. Is this a Loggeman reference? What was the first one? The first one was Learn to Fly by the Foo Fighters. This one is Old School by Guitar Short. I don't know what's going on, Tony. Any clue?
We're going to school today. We're learning.
Oh, there you go. The professor's here.
Nailed it.
But what was the first one? Oh, Learn.
Learn,
I got
you.
There you go. Why am I so dense? It's hard to say.
You're not. You were just going for other themes.
That's a question people have asked for a long time. There's really no good answer. Sherrod Martin's a guy we all blanked on here. Thanks to Alfie Crow, Big Cat Country, and Andrew Gibson at 1010XL, both simultaneously hitting me up. And there's a report on the National Football Post today that said, according to Aaron Wilson, who's a pretty well-respected NFL reporter, that according to a source, the Jags had re-signed Sherrod Martin this morning. And haven't seen anything official from the Jags, and that doesn't mean it hasn't occurred. It could mean that whoever they are making a roster move to make room for Martin has not been informed yet. Obviously, they're going to do that before they send out anything official. Chris Brzezinski is out for 2 to 4 weeks.
Right.
Is that a player worth holding on to and holding a roster spot for?
It doesn't have to be position for position.
No, it doesn't.
You know, it could be, you know, the wide receiver position. You know, you're stacked there. I mean, I'm looking at the wide receiver position depth chart right now. Marquise Lee, Allen Hurns, they're not going anywhere. Cecil Shorts, Allen Robinson, they're not going anywhere. Kerry Taylor is a guy that was elevated
right
to the wide receiver position. Mike Brown.
Possibly, right.
So Kerry Taylor, Mike Brown, Tavares King, who you signed off of the Carolina Panthers practice squad.
Who you have to keep up.
You have to keep him up right for a minimum of 3 weeks or something
three
like that.
Three or four,
that.
Yeah, something like that.
So wide receiver could be.
That's
at,
a good point.
You know, so it doesn't have to be that position specific.
But keep an eye out for that. And you thought it was, you know, kind of close anyway between him making the roster coming out of camp.
Yeah, I think there was a pretty good debate about Sherrod Martin. I mean, Sherrod Martin, when he was a young player, Sherrod Martin was a good football player for the Carolina Panthers. And then he had, I mean, a horrific, devastating knee injury. He's never been quite the same player. But there's been certain guys that have had an injury like that don't come back immediately and get back to form, you know, in a year or two. Sometimes it takes them 3 years. Sometimes it takes them 4 years. Sometimes they never get back. But he showed some signs that that he was starting to get healthy. But most importantly, he's a veteran guy. He's been there. He's done that. He's going to have a lot of awareness on the field if he has to play on defense. And that's exactly what you need right now. You need to calm that secondary down and calm the coverage down. He might have the ability to do that. Now, I'm not saying he's going to walk in the door and start, but he's a veteran guy in a secondary that's very young.
641-1010, the phone number. Phone lines are loaded up right now if you want to get on board. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Logman, Fat Tony here with you. Matt, you're up next on Jaguars Today. Good morning. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good, thanks.
You know, I've been sitting here listening, you know, the past couple of days, you know, listening to, you know, to some people call in, talk about the defense and, you know, how they're struggling and, you know, how they don't look, you know, don't look the part. And I think, you know, a very good argument could be made that, you know, when they're out there for 40 plays within, you know, the first quarter and a half, you know, when we've only run 9 plays, I think that plays in to a big, you know, part of mental breakdowns. You know, as an athlete, I think you get discouraged, you know, when you see your offense go out constantly going 3 and out for 2 straight games. And, you know, I think that plays a big part in why the defense may not be performing. And I think, you know, Bortles, I think he came in and ran, you know, 10 plays on the first drive. And I think that makes a big difference when they get that, you know, 3-4 minutes of rest, you know, to come back out and make stops. Cause I thought the defense played better in the second half than they did in the first half. Not sure if that's because the Colts kind of backed down or, you know, if it was just a different feel with Bortles coming in, but that's my thought and opinion on that.
All right. Jeff, this is a much discussed topic on this program. How much of that, you know, getting worn down back out there 3 and out is impacting this defense, and how much is just things that are correctable otherwise?
Well, I think mentally, as a defensive player, when your offense is going 3 and out consistently, which in the first half, I mean, here it is, 3 and out, 3 and out, 3 and out, 3 and outs, okay, and then you had 6 plays, and then you had the fumble by Mike Brown very early in that drive, and then you had 1 play, and it was halftime. I mean, your offense didn't string anything together, and it's deflating. There's no doubt about it that it's deflating for the other side of the ball when they just can't do anything right. But at the same time, you can't look at that and have that impact your play. You are playing a lot of guys in that front 7. You're playing 8-9 guys on the defensive front. You're playing 5 guys at the linebacking core in the secondary. You're not rotating quite as much. But, getting tired or winded, I don't think can be used as, okay, we're getting tired. You know, if you were tired, then how come the first 6 drives you gave touchdowns up?
Well, that's kind of my point, right? Or scoring. There was nothing to do with, it wasn't the offense's fault when Winston Guy is peeking in the wrong place on the first 3rd and 8, right? So there are mistakes that are being made regardless of what time or how long they've been out on the field.
First half against Philadelphia, I made the point in a broadcast. I thought that if Nick Foles were sharp, the Jaguars would have been in trouble.
Because you said guys were running open on several deep routes, and he just didn't see
it. Just didn't see it.
Right.
You know, so it's not.
So it wasn't like they were playing great. They're taking advantage of a quarterback who was missing some things that were there.
Yeah, so it's not like they came out in the first half against Philadelphia, and they were playing really well, and because their offense was doing something, they had the ability to play well. You know, it was kind of masked, I guess you could say, because Nick Foles wasn't on his game. I mean, this defense has got to play a lot better. You can't say that since the second half of Philadelphia, things have fallen apart for this defense.
I'm sure you've been on the short end of some bad scores. You play enough football, right? I mean, it's just going to happen.
A lot of them.
Right? So you're there in the second half. What happens to the mental dynamic? How tough is it to stay focused and do those mental mistakes multiply? Because like you're talking about the discouragement factor, you're thinking, man, you know, no matter what we do, does it really matter? Because, you know, I'm just trying to think what kind of thoughts might be going through at least some fans' heads. What goes through a football player's head if you're on defense in that circumstance?
It takes a lot of strong wills to overcome that. I mean, you look at the Baltimore Ravens when they were in their heyday, when they had a defense, you know, Ray Lewis and Tony Siragusa.
Ed Reed.
The big defensive tackle. Yeah, Ed Reed. And, I mean,
Who was the 330-pounder, Tony?
Sam Adams.
Was Sam Adams.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, you talk about a dominant front. and then the defensive ends, McCrary. Gosh, I can't remember the other guy, but Jamie, the
Sharper, outside,
Jamie Sharper, Virginia guy. I mean, if Rod Woodson was there for a little bit. I mean, that defense was unbelievable. They didn't get discouraged about Trent Dilfer in that offense that struggled. You know, they were able to run the football a little bit, but they weren't scoring a lot of points. They weren't putting drives together. It went 8, 9, 10
Now, they went
plays.
Like a 5-week stretch without scoring an offensive touchdown, didn't
they?
In
did.
That season?
That's right.
And they kept winning games.
So, but, I mean, that's a veteran group, you know, and, you know, you have to have guys like Chris Clemens, you know, Red Bryant, Paul Posluszny, Jonathan Ciprian, even though he's a young player, they have to take command of the room. They have to command leadership. They have to demand things out of their teammates.
Let's get Jerome up here next before we break. 641-1010. Good morning, Jerome.
Hey, good morning. Good morning. How y'all doing?
Good, man.
All right, I got two questions, one on offense, one on defense, and I'll make it quick, I promise. Is it the scheme or personnel on the offensive side, you know what I mean, knowing that he
experience.
Came from college?
Experience. You know what I mean?
Experience.
It's so young.
And on the defensive side, what is it that they're not understanding? Because I know he got three players from Seattle. You know what I mean? Red Bryant, Clemens, and Guy. And both, all three of those are familiar with the scheme. So, I mean, and the other two, and this is like year two. You see what I'm saying? It's not year one, it's year two with that defense. And the other players, they should already guess what's really going on. That means there's only 8 players left. Really, at a time on the field that should be understanding what's going on, especially your starters. But I know it is year two, but going in year three, I know we're going to do better with Bortles and it's going to help and it's going to adjust, you know what I mean? Things would switch. The defense will probably look a little better and the offense will too. But what's your take on like year three? I mean, if we just start out the gate not really doing too good, does it come down to scheme or personnel? Do you see changes in the coaching staff? Or?
Well, first of all, let's not worry about what might happen and how they start year three.
Yeah, let's worry
They're
about
They're three
year
games
two.
Into year two. This is what Gus Bradley had to say yesterday about whether it's execution or what's being called on defense.
It's not the defensive calls. It's more the responsibilities within the calls. When I look at that and I see 10 guys doing it right, one guy not doing it right, you know, you see some things like that, or even technique errors. Even with some of our better players, I think we need to tighten up on that.
All right. A lot of people were calling yesterday questioning, is Bob Babich getting the job done? Is he not instructing these guys? Why are these guys making mental errors? Does Gus need to take over the play calling? Gus seems to indicate He's satisfied with the scheme, and it's kind of, as you're pointing out, there's way too many mental errors. That's what I take from that.
No, it's everybody. I mean, the coaches need to do a better job.
What can they do? What can Bob Babich do differently to improve this situation?
Emphasize, demand, accountability. You know, I mean, that's what coaches do. Make sure that the players fully understand every assignment, every possibility, and the players have to also take that and then be able to execute it. And it's on them as well. I mean, so it's a shared responsibility. It's not like you can point the finger at that and say, that's the problem right there. And going back to his question, he talked about, well, they got Red Bryant, Chris Clemens, and Winston Guy Jr. from Seattle. They should know the scheme. Well, Winston Guy didn't make the final roster in Seattle for a reason.
Right.
Okay. He needs to get better. Red Bryant, I think, is playing pretty doggone good. You know, he's a run-stuffing defensive end. He's holding up his end of the bargain. I think Chris Clemens has to take it up a notch. I think Chris Clemens has the ability to play the run better than he has. And then also he has the ability to pass rush better. I'm not saying he's playing bad, but I'm also not saying that he's playing at a high level.
They got to get more out of him at this point in time. All right, by the way, I forgot to mention earlier, today's fan feedback spotlight, which you can weigh in on by tweeting at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Lauren. We asked you, with Blake Bortles at the helm now, who will be his favorite pass-catching target the rest of the way this season over the next 13 games? You can weigh in on Twitter or on the Jaguars Today Facebook page as well. We'll give you our thoughts on that a little bit later on in hour number two. Got a break. We'll come back. This state in football history, the Honda drive around the NFL, and more with Jeff Logman.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, let's take a look-see on this date in football history, 1934. Welcome to the National Football League to the Detroit Lions. This date in football history brought to you by the Best Fence Company of Jacksonville. The Lions played their first game on this date 80 years ago, beating the hapless New York Giants. I just say that for Fat Tony's sake, at the University of Detroit Stadium before a raucous crowd, a Michigan Wolverine-esque crowd of 12,000 fans.
Yeah, baby.
And if you don't know what I'm talking about, go look up that story about Michigan giving away two tickets to their games for the price of two two-liter Cokes. Oh, my goodness. Anyway, the Lions would go on to win three championships in their first 19 years of existence and haven't won one since. So if you think you're long-suffering, think of the 61 years that the Lions have been in the proverbial wasteland, the desert of the National Football League. That is this date in football history brought to you by the Best Fence Company of Jacksonville. Whether you're a homeowner looking for a fence for your house, whether you're a business owner, the Best Fence Company of Jacksonville will help you beautify your home, protect your home, protect your business. Your family's going to feel better. You're going to breathe easier knowing that Best Fence installed your new fence. They'll give you a professional free estimate at your convenience. Call them at 268-1638 or visit bestfencejacks.net for more information. That is this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
Well, the Pittsburgh Steelers are looking for some linebacker help after seeing their last two first-round picks go down with injuries. Ryan Shazier and Jarvis Jones both got hurt on Sunday night against the Carolina Panthers. James Harrison, was expected to be signing with the Steelers to retire after spending 1 year in Cincinnati, but after the injury news, that plan has changed, and instead, he's going to be suiting it up one more time for the Pittsburgh Steelers. The Baltimore Ravens have responded to the Outside the Lines report that the team's handling of the Ray Rice domestic abuse case. Ravens owner Steve Bisciotti said yesterday that the story was manufactured from accounts provided by the running back's inner circle. In other Ray Rice news, the NFL Players Association has announced that they will conduct their own review of the Ray Rice investigation.
It's a cottage industry cropping up around reviewing what's going on in the National Football League these days. If you'd like to get on board, 641-1010. It's a shame for Jarvis Jones. He had an extremely quiet rookie season and has played pretty well here in the early going. Had a couple of sacks in his first three games. A big sack fumble against Cam Newton the other night, but he'll be down for a while now. If you'd like to get on board with Jeff Loggeman, again, 641-1010 is the number. And let us go to Slow-Mo Jay. Haven't heard from him in a while. What's up, Jay? How are you?
I'm all right. How you doing?
We're fine. Jeff, is this the first time you ever talked to Slow-Mo Jay?
I understand the nickname now, Jay.
What's up, Jay?
Very mellow, Jay.
Yeah, I got like three things. They're going to be quick. One is on the defense. I kind of like that what we had, the combination at the safety position with Evans more than I like with Winston Guy Jr. And I don't see how Mike Brown keep making his roster. I mean, he's like not even out the average, but we have people that's on practice squad that's a little bit better than him. And what's your take on a three starting receivers? Who would you like to see?
Well, I'll start with, lead me. Which one do you want to start
with? Start with the receivers. What do you envision? Everyone's
start
healthy.
Three? I mean, yeah. Everybody healthy. Yeah. Cecil, Allen Robinson, and Allen Hurns right now.
Right now, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Based on productivity.
I mean, based on productivity, knowledge of the scheme, I think Marquise Lee right now needs to earn it back.
He's made a few mental mistakes as well. Is that correct?
All you have to do is to watch Gus Bradley's press conference last week when he talked about mental errors. You know, he gave this little spiel about mental errors, and then he was asked specifically about Marquise Lee, and he went,
"It's been an ongoing."
Before he spoke.
It's been an ongoing thing.
I'm not saying that that means anything. I'm just saying that's what I heard.
Pointing that out.
That's what I saw.
Okay. All right. We'll take that as we'll go with Hearns, Robinson, and Shorts
breath.
Right now. Jay said he liked
Mike Brown. Let me address Mike Brown.
Okay. Yep.
Why does Mike Brown continue to make the roster? You trust him. You can put him back there as a punt returner. He's going to catch the ball. Is he going to wow you when he starts making moves up the field? No. but he's going to catch the ball every time. When he plays special teams, he's going to do anything he has. You can put him at L5 or R5, which is the two most psycho positions in all of special teams. Those
explain,
are the,
what are we talking about here?
Okay, they're all labeled on kickoff team by the guys from the left side of the ball to the right side of the ball. The guys that are closest to the sidelines are L1 and R1, working all the way to the middle to where you have L5 and R5. The kicker is number 11.
Okay.
Okay, so those, that's how you label it. L5 and R5 are the guys that go down there and wedge bust. Okay. If you ask Mike Brown to play L5 or R5, Mike Brown's going to play L5 or R5. And guess what? He's going to do a pretty good job. If you put him in at X, Z, or any wide receiver position, he's going to know what to do. You trust Mike Brown. Now, does he have a limited skill set? Yes. But coaches trust guys like Mike Brown.
In terms of, you know, going forward, though, there's a logjam, as you pointed out.
No doubt. He's going to be the odd man out at some point when they start to trust Marquise Lee. And they start to trust Allen Hurns and Allen Robinson.
And we've got a Sanders eligible to come back a week from now as well. How do you see him factoring in to the mix? I mean, is that, in your mind right now, A. Sanders comes in, he plugs right into your starting punt return job?
Yes.
Okay. So
does it plug right in to the rotation at wide receiver?
I don't think it matters so maybe much, not. Right? Because you don't need him to immediately with all these guys, which is a nice thing to
the
say.
The best part is that once he comes back, okay, now there's competition between Marquise Lee, Allen Robinson, Cecil Shorts, Allen Hurns. Hey, guys, there's four of you. We got three spots.
We got three, right.
Who's going to give us the best? That's the greatest motivator in all of football. Is competition. And I'm not talking, you know, Gus Bradley teaches competition within. The reality is competition amongst guys for play time and balls motivates guys in a big way.
All right, 641-1010, back to the phones we go. Jordan, you're on the line on Jaguars Today with Jeff Logman. How are you?
I'm doing excellent, fellas. How about yourself?
Great, thanks.
I just have, like, two things to say. One thing is I read this book. It's called The Magic of Thinking Big by Dr. James Swartz, and there's a chapter in there called Excuse-itis. So it's how all these people go through things about, you know, they'll have such a bad day or the excuses that they come up with. So to me, I would have to say Jaguars' attitude is everything. No matter if you guys lose by 40, you can lose by 2. I think that the attitude of the team, and because of their fans, are always trying to think big and trying, you know, we want to get to the playoffs, this, that, and the other. Well, it's not going to really happen. That we live in reality, not actuality, you know. So, and then my second thing is, Blake Bortles, I feel like we have a positive defense, and I've been a fan since 95, so he looks almost kind of like Mark Brunell, so just give him that little ego boost. And that's about it.
Gotcha. Well, let me say this. First of all, your first part there was very deep. Very deep.
Personally, to me, the most important thing is win the damn game, whatever your attitude is. You can have a crap attitude if you get a W. And,
you're a kill the beast guy, okay? But then there's that Eastern philosophy.
I get it.
Competition within, be the best you can be, which is that's what Gus Bradley talks about.
And if that
Phil
result,
Jackson
but what is the point of that? The result in the W, right? So give me the W with a bad attitude if you can continue to do that consistently. So there you have it. He was very deep.
Yeah, that was deep. The second part, I mean, I don't envision Blake Bortles being like Mark Brunell. You know, to me, the closest comparison, and I'm not trying to say that he's going to become this, but the closest comparison that you would draw to Blake Bortles is Ben Roethlisberger. Clearly.
You know, tell me if you think I'm nuts on this. Is he a supersized Russell Wilson in a little bit? Just the way he carries himself, the movement skills, always keeping the eyes down. Like you mentioned earlier, when he breaks containment, he's looking to throw. He's not looking. But he also knows, look, if I can beat you to the corner and pick up the first down, I can do that with my legs. I see a lot of Russell Wilson's game. Russell Wilson's more accomplished. Clearly, he's won the Super Bowl. I get that. But I'm just saying that I see even mannerisms, the way they carry themselves a little bit of the same between those.
Well, guys. I like the comparison that you're making because Russell Wilson is like 7-0.
He is 7-0 against the top guys, right.
You know, Drew Brees.
Rodgers and Brady.
Yeah, exactly.
7-0.
I'll take that.
Oh, well, right? I'll take 6-1. Right, I'm not. But did you see the play Roethlisberger made the other night to Antonio Brown in the back of the end zone?
I did not.
That full pump fake to the left. I mean, as hard a pump fake as you can do it and still hanging on to the football, gets guys out of position, gets a big guy right in his face, half pump fakes him out of position as he's going to blast him. The guy reacts, moving to the right, getting hit, lobs one. I mean, the touch on this pass to the corner of the end zone over a couple of defenders, Antonio Brown drags the toes. As good a play as I've seen so far this year in the National Football
League. He's a heck of a player. But I do like that you, because Roethlisberger, I think, sometimes extends the play too long to make something happen, whereas Russell Wilson does not. And I see Blake Bortles not having to extend the play quite as long to make something happen.
I gotcha. But at the same time, I'll take Roethlisberger's resume as well. I'll
take either one of
you'll
them.
You'll take two wins, even if they say that first one was in spite of him. Who cares?
That's right.
You know what? Let's go to Jordan up next here, 641-1010. Jordan, you're on Jaguars Today. Go ahead, please. I'm sorry, Michael, you're up next. What's up, Michael?
Good morning, gentlemen. I've got two questions for you. One, now that we've turned the page with Blake Bortles, how do we approach the tight end position, which I feel is pretty in need of right now? Where do we go in the future for that? And then the second thing is, I don't know if you guys have noticed, but me watching the games is Winston guy is bound to hurt somebody with lowering his head and the late hits. When is that going to be addressed to the point where he decides to change his tactics?
Let me just address that, because the hit that he had against Washington, there was nothing wrong with that. The running back was flipped into the air when he was making his approach. You can't put that on Winston Guy Jr. Now, the other one, yeah, unnecessary. Is he going to hurt somebody? I don't think he leads with his head. I think he's just an aggressive player. I think Reggie Nelson, when he was here, used to lead with his head and launch at guys. To me, I worry about the health of the guy that's launching,
right,
and the guy that's going to be on the receiving end of that. But Winston Guy is an aggressive player. I mean, what, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, he'd be a hero.
But in today's NFL,
it's different.
He's overly aggressive, right? I mean,
he just needs to be a little bit more measured. But here's the question. A guy like that, if he has to become measured, does he lose his edge?
Right. Is that what makes him an NFL player, is his, you know, his willingness to go to the wall?
Yeah.
Hold the thought on the tight ends. We will discuss that coming up, because it's something we've been discussing off the air this morning, and we'll share those thoughts with you in a moment. It is Jaguars Today, and we're live in the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios. The number, as always, 641-1010. Professor Jeff Loggeman in the house today. Class is in session, so join us here on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Loggeman, Fat Tony here with you, and glad you're along on a Tuesday. Adult Education by Hall & Oates. Going to school with Jeff Loggeman every Tuesday. You know what? I'm done with school. I still have, I guess, I don't know if I'd call it a nightmare, but I still have that dream every once in a while that I've got like a school project, and I neglected it till the last minute, and now I've got to cram 3 weeks of work into 3 hours, that kind of thing. And I'm telling you, I wake up every time, and I'm like, oh, I'm so glad I'm done.
Like
with
the Brian Regan bit where he wakes up, he's like, you remember the science fair? You wake up the morning of the science fair and you're like, oh no, I have nothing. So you just get a plastic cup, put some dirt in it, walk in. What's your project, Brian? Well, it's a cup of dirt.
That's about it. Yeah. But I like coming to class on Tuesdays, though.
Yeah, it's awesome. Point.
It's continuing education with Jeff Loggeman. By the way, I will post the new photo contest, courtesy of Foundation Professionals of Florida, on the Jaguars Today Facebook page. The theme for the next couple weeks is going to be old school, okay? So whatever that means to you from a Jaguar context, feel free to post those photos. And what you're playing for is a pair of tickets to the Cleveland game, week 7 here, Jacksonville versus Cleveland. Maybe you'll see a Manziel Bortles matchup, although the way Hoyer's playing right now, they're probably not immediate. Jeff just gave me the quick shake off. That ain't happening. And also, accompanying that, you'll get two tickets or two passes to the 1010XL pregame party that day as well. So be looking for that on the Jaguars Today Facebook page, courtesy of Foundation Professionals of Florida. If you've got issues with your home's foundation, 287 2690 is the number, or visit foundationprosfl.com. Okay, calls are stacking up again, but let's get to this question we had before the break, Jeff, about the tight end position here. I said to you, from my untrained eye, I don't know why Marcel Jensen is on the football field, because he's not impacting you in the passing game, and he's negatively impacting you in pass protection, in my opinion. What can be done
only,
with this?
Only pass protection?
Well, and whatever. He's getting tossed around, okay? it's most evident in that when I see him getting driven back 4 yards, discarded, and then the defender takes a beeline to the quarterback.
I think you bring up a great point. You know, if he's going to be in there as a blocker, whether it be in pass protection or as a run blocker, insert Josh Wells into the game.
That's exactly right. Put a sixth lineman in.
I totally agree with you on that. Now, can he impact the passing game? Yeah, he could, because he's got great hands. He probably has the best hands of anybody on the roster. Believe it or not. I mean,
that's saying something.
His hands are that good.
And he's got tremendous height. You know, which should give you a nice
good size.
You know,
but he doesn't use it very well. You know, and he definitely doesn't use it very well as a blocker. He is a liability as a blocker. He is what we call a good lookout blocker. In other words, he misses his guy and yells,
"Look out!"
Look out, because here he comes.
So, what can be done?
But I mean, you know, hey, look, you got one of the best blocking tight ends in football. On designated injury reserve.
Right.
You have who I think is an outstanding second tight end in Clay Harbor, because he is physical, he will block, and he can get vertical and threaten the defense vertically, but he's been hurt.
And you talked about this, I think, a little bit last week, because most people look at Clay Harbor, myself included, and you know, and we think, boy, he seems like that typical NFL move tight end now. He's not as big as some tight ends you'll see. He's a tremendous pass catcher, and they were really incorporating him during OTAs. Got a heavy volume of targets, but you think he's, or you say, you know that he's much more physical maybe than his reputation indicates.
He's more physical than Zach Ertz, more physical than Brent Celek, more physical than Kobe Fleener. Okay.
So that's three of the guys you just played.
Yeah. I mean, he's that physical. One of the greatest matchups that they had in preseason OTAs mini camps was him going against Red Bryant. I mean, and it was physical. I mean, in fact, one time it almost got down to fisticuffs, because he was getting after Red Bryant. There's not many guys that are willing to do that. Now, Marcel Jensen would go into Red Bryant very soft, okay, and hesitant. And he's still in the games that he's playing right now. He's going into blocks, and he's choking it down before he's delivering a block. That's not a good sign. Either a dog has fight or a dog doesn't have fight, okay? And Marcel Jensen right now is not showing that he has enough dog in him that he's going to be able to be a blocker.
All right, well,
some guys either have it or they don't.
Some indication that, some hope anyway, that Clay Harbor will return to practice.
I hope so.
Tomorrow.
I mean, it would be a big boost. Now, Mickey Schuler Jr., we'll fight you, we'll scrap you, not the most talented guy in the world, you know, on a roster, he's your fourth tight end, you know, but you've got two injuries to your first two, it's the way it is. You know, everybody knew that, and coming out of preseason, when we were talking about, okay, what position do you think that they may address on the waiver wire? We all said tight end.
Right.
I mean, you knew it. You knew it was coming. That was the one position that they were deficient at. Once you got past those two guys, that there was an injury, you did not feel good about it. But they just don't grow on trees. You can't address, just much like the safety position, much like the linebacker position. You can't address everything in 2 years when you're completely rebuilding a football team from the ground up, and there wasn't a lot in place that you felt good about to begin with.
641-1010 is the number if you'd like to get on board Jaguars today. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Loggeman, Fat Tony. Let's welcome Kay to the program. Good morning, Kay.
Hey, hi. Good morning to you guys. I have two things I wanted to say. I don't really have a question. I wanted to say that I disagree with the whole Nick Foles not being sharp and missed the open receivers. Well, it's because of our defensive pressure in that first half that made him afraid and timid to even stand in that pocket long to look down there. We was killing him in that first half of the game, and we almost could have won that game if we would have kept momentum with those two field goals that Josh Scobie missed. But also, I want to say another thing about the fans are griping and complaining about the Jags and just downing the Jags like that. But at the game, it took the people there to do those horns on third down just to get the fans to stand up and cheer and get excited. Had it not been for those horns, that stadium would not have even been that loud on third downs. And it's an embarrassment compared to Seattle and some of these other stadiums where these fans are at. So I would just like the fans to kind of relax and chill. I mean, they left the Jags high and dry. Some of them didn't even stay to see Blake Bortles in the second half because they bailed like the Miami Heat fans bailed in the finals two seasons ago.
I'm never going to blame fans.
It's 30-0.
I'm not going to blame
okay?
fans.
You know, for years, I made this comparison and others have as well. There was no incentive for the Chicago Cubs to ever get better. You know why? Because every day was a party, and they'd sell out the stadium, didn't matter what the results were. And the fans never reacted to years of losing by taking away the only leverage they had on the club to force improvement, which was to not buy tickets and not show up. Yeah, fans are sick and tired of it, man. They went through this for 8 games last year. They didn't expect it to start this way. They've had a 75-point deficit the first 3 weeks of the season, which is one of the largest in NFL history.
Yeah, I'm not going to blame the fans, but Kay, at the same time, I watched the film of the Philadelphia Eagles game in the first half. You can sit there and say that he was scared of the pressure.
When you're saying he's missing guys, we're not talking because he made some erroneous or some inaccurate throws that I do think was because of the pressure in part. But you're talking about he didn't see the guy. You're not talking about here's a guy open and I missed him by 2 yards.
No.
You're talking about I missed seeing him.
He didn't even see him.
And the opportunity to throw. That's what you're talking about. It's a different thing, I think, than Kay is talking about here.
I'm just telling you the truth, Kay.
No, and I think what his point is right, that there, Foles did look rattled to me. Okay, Foles was getting knocked around. He started missing guys.
He started the game missing guys before the pressure really became a factor.
But it I think it intensified.
And then it intensified
as the first half went on.
Absolutely.
But when you say missing guys, you're not talking about I've got an open receiver. I didn't hit him with my pass. You're talking about not seeing guys.
Not even seeing them.
Right, not seeing open guys that could have hit for big plays.
No.
So it's a different thing, I think, that you're discussing.
Very different thing.
Right there. Thank you for the call, though, Kay. Let's go to Leon next up here on
Jaguars
Today.
Okay, thanks for taking my question, guys. Jeff, you said earlier that Jacksonville's defense is a zone-type defense. Could you tell us the difference or the best-suited players for playing zone as opposed to man defense?
Well, Deion Sanders is best suited to play in man coverage. Patrick Peterson is best suited to play in man coverage. Richard Sherman is better at playing a zone defense.
What is it about a guy that makes him better suited to play zone?
There's not. First of all, you have to have a great skill set to play man. Great skill set. You have to be fast. You have to be quick. You have to be decisive. You have to have great body control because you're reacting. You're reacting to a route. Whereas in a zone defense, a player can get away with not having quite that skill set, but if his mind is better, if his anticipation and his awareness is better, then he can react in a zone much easier than versus man-to-man. In man-to-man, you got to have the skill set. In zone coverage, you can be short on the skill set, but you could have a great mind and play at a high level.
Okay. I think that hopefully that explains it a
little
bit.
I'm talking specifically about the corner position, you know, and it also applies to linebacker and safety, but more so at that corner position. Not everybody can match up against a Calvin Johnson or Julio Jones and at least have a chance. Most guys would match up against them, and they've got no chance.
What would you say the percentage is of man-to-zone being played in the National Football League?
It depends on teams. You mean it's for overall?
Yeah, overall.
Overall, probably 50-50.
Okay.
You know, probably 60-40, 60 zone, 40% man.
Here's what I think. I think when people see guys running the open, wide open in the secondary, it doesn't matter what you're playing, it's the wrong thing, right? That's the feeling, right?
And so there's some that say that, you know what, why don't you just go ahead and play man if guys are going to be running free? Well, guess what?
They'll be running more free you don't have the guys to match up.
They'll play against Indianapolis where Kobe Fleener is running down the seam free, and he was in man. Dakota Watson had a eye violation. He was looking in the backfield. Kobe Flina runs right by him.
As a general rule, the Jags want to get pressure without doing a ton of blitzing, right? It's fair to say.
In a perfect world, that's the way you want it.
Oh, of course, anybody would want that.
You'd love
to get pressure with a three-man line. But Gus Bradley, is it fair to say, this is what we've heard, that the success of his defense is predicated on being able to get pressure with a four-man front and being able to use those other seven guys in various, you know.
Yeah, that's the way that they would like to play defense.
If you're not, if Andrew Luck can sit back there and survey the field and turn his head and turn his head and turn his head and come back all the way to the other side and there's a wide open guy.
Mm-hmm.
Do you, if you're Jeff Logman, would you say, man, we need to send a few more guys. We need to do something different because what we're doing now is not working.
At times, and there's ways to still play zone and bring an extra guy. That's what they call a zone dog. A zone dog is what I was describing to you a while ago when I was drawing up on the board in which Winston guy on the first third and eight had an issue in coverage against Kobe Flina, and that you bring a five-man pressure and you're playing a 3-under-3 deep zone behind that five-man pressure. So you're bringing the extra guy, but you're still playing a zone, and you're expecting that the five guys can accelerate the process of getting rid of the football to where you can just have him dump it short, make a tackle. And if he is looking deep, the pressure is going to get there before
he has a chance.
He has an opportunity to release the football.
Yeah. By the way, I say this, Tony and I talk about this all the time. One of these days, I swear we're going to bring a few people in here on Tuesday just to sit back and take it all in, because Jeff does go, we get our own chalk talk sessions. Jeff goes to the whiteboard. He diagrams something. He gets up in the breaks. He's doing a lot of stuff. And it's a learning process for us. It's a lot of fun. Let's go to Matt next up here on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Matt. How are you?
Hey guys. Thanks for taking my call. Just wanted to weigh in on two different things here. First of all, the difference between, Denard Robinson and, Toby Gerhardt, you know, Denard came in later and made a good impact on the game. It seems like Toby hasn't been much of a playmaker, and I wanted to hear what y'all's opinions were on that. The second thing was when Blake Bortles came in the second half, he came in and it seemed like the whole team was energized and playing better, but shouldn't that same level of intensity been going for the whole game? And I don't know if that, I'm the only one that is bugged by that, but that's it seems like they should have been since play number one.
All right, thank you, Matt.
Let me address the level of intensity. You know, when you have success, sometimes it comes off as being more intense, prepared, ready. Okay.
See, I'm. Go ahead, because I'm so glad you're about to say what I think you're going to say.
When a team comes out and they don't perform well, you could have 10 guys on a play, 10 guys playing lights out. I'm talking Hall of Fame level performance. And if you have one guy that has a breakdown and it creates a big opportunity, explosive play, the fans' perception of that is they weren't ready to play.
They're not intense. They're not trying. their spirit is not there. I mean, effort. And that's
But I get it. I mean, I get it. I mean, that's, you know, that's sometimes how it looks.
But what you described earlier, I asked you, and I didn't tell you why, I said, why does Blake Bortles make those around him better? Everything you described was how he plays. It wasn't the fact that, oh, Blake's out there now, we're going to try now.
No, it's not like he walks into the huddle and there's this aura around him that's like 4 foot, you know, in radius all the way around his whole body, and he walks into the huddle and this aura just passes to the rest of the huddle. Blake Bortles takes the snap and makes things happen
right. Because
of his performance abilities.
Right.
That's what elevates and makes it look more intense and better, because his performance, his play is better.
They're not necessarily blocking better, but they don't have to block as long if he's getting rid of the football. Or if the guy gets through, he's got the ability to make that guy miss it for that extra half second that it takes to get the pass out right. But it's his actual play.
It's
not just the presence of this guy that lifts everything up. What about the running back situation?
Well, I think Toby Gerhardt is still not healthy. Denard Robinson showed a burst this past game. And I can honestly say that's the first game that I said to myself, Denard Robinson looks like a running back, an explosive running back. He was making cuts that were quick, decisive, and with power. Denard in the past would make cuts that didn't have power. He was not having a burst. Now, once he got out into space, he would have a burst. But rarely did you ever see Denard Robinson have a burst in traffic. We saw it this past game. You know, we knew and everybody knew. David Caldwell knew that Denard Robinson was going to be a project. But he was worth the risk of the draft position that you picked him at to allow him time to develop with the hand and to make the transition to continue at running back. He showed some good things.
Will we continue to see a higher percentage of Denard Robinson being on the field?
No doubt. Gus Bradley said it yesterday, too. Said Denard has earned that right.
641-1010. Still have time for some of your calls if you want to get in with Professor Loggeman this morning. Also, the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships Fan Feedback Spotlight today, asking you over the next 13 games, who will be Blake Bortles' favorite receiving target? But whether it's a wide receiver, tight end, back out of the backfield, whatever you like, bring it to the table. We'll go through some of your responses coming up. Get a few more phone calls in as well. We're live in the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios. It's Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, hot for teacher. Speak for yourself, Brooks.
I have a feeling this one would give me a little ribbing.
Well, I mean, look, I like Jeff, but let's not get carried away here, all right? I like the knowledge that he brings to the table every day. By the way, just saying, Jag's brothers on Twitter, he's a smart one. He may have been the first guy to suggest he wants a seat for Tuesdays with Loggeman. Duly noted, okay? I'm not saying it's going to happen. It might be one of these things I threaten will happen to bring a couple of people in here because I think people would really enjoy coming in here and
I know I
watching
would.
It.
You know what? And the best part of that is
it's, what's that?
It could be another sales point.
It absolutely could be another sales
sponsor.
Point. Or it could be breakfast. What are you bringing? Tony, today in the...
That's very trustworthy of you there, Mike.
Well, that's a good point. I got to get a food taster in here. That's
here,
a good
you
point.
Take a bite of this first, and I'm going to wait 30 minutes to see if you die.
Hey,
before I take a bite.
One of the Keith was tailgating the other day, made us some breakfast burritos for me and JP. And, I mean, I guess if they're going to poison me, they're going to get me because I just went right ahead.
See, on Saturday morning, we have trusted sources of food.
I understand.
Okay.
You got to develop those. There are a lot more people that are out to get me than are out to get you. Everybody likes
Lester, Loggeman. Lester, Gordon, you know, those guys. Yeah.
Lester, come on by. Tuesdays with Loggeman. All right.
Lester brings donuts.
Does he?
Yeah. Oh, man.
All right.
Gordon brings stuff off the smoker.
The Tom Bush Family of Dealerships Fan Feedback Spotlight asked folks today, who will Blake Bortles' favorite pass-catching target be, Tony? I think we had an overwhelming favorite here, but
yeah.
Give us a sample, please.
Here's what we got from Nick Allen Robinson, Rookie of the Year, hashtag Jaguars Today, hashtag A-Rob, hashtag get him the ball from at Irish Jaguar. I really like what I've seen out of A-Rob so far. He's quietly been putting together a great season. From Mike Allen Robinson, he's going to be the Jags' best receiver by year's end. From Eric, going to be Hearns. Looks like he can get open consistently. A-Rob 15 will be good, too. From CM Allen, the burner Hearns. Hashtag he good. Hashtag Jaguars Today. From Devon, we got Allen Robinson. Reminds me of CS3's second season when he just racked up yards. Hashtag Jaguars Today. Hashtag t-shirt, please. From Ben, shorts this season. Robinson and Lee have more upside, but I think he'll rely on the veteran a little bit more. From Paolo, we got Allen Robinson for sure. Hashtag AR15, hashtag free Denard. From Chuck, CS3 if he stays healthy, but Robinson is possession guy and will eat all season. From Adam Hearns, he's a beast. Hashtag can't stop him. From Sean, Cecil Shorts when he's healthy. If not, I see Hearns playing a big role in the passing game. And from David, Allen Robinson is going to catch 80 balls this year. He's the next Anquan Boldin.
All right, that means he'll probably be headbutting defensive back sooner rather than later, because that's his move out there. I'd love to tell you what the folks said on Facebook, and I just realized I never hit the post button, so I just posted it on Facebook. If you want to weigh in, you're welcome to. We'll give out a t-shirt or two later on this afternoon. How would you answer that question? Who will end up being the favorite target of Blake Bortles, Jeff?
Well, I think it's the guys that he's worked with the most, which would be Allen Hearns, and then after that, take your pick. I mean, that's the most.
Worked with Allen Robinson that much.
Nobody's worked with Allen Robinson, Cecil Shorts, Marquise Lee. You know, plus he's, you know, sometimes he's going to be where he's going to be, and sometimes he's not going to be where he's supposed to be. You know, so I think Allen Hurns is going to be definitely a favorite target of his. And then he will probably lean towards Cecil a little bit just because he's the veteran. You know, and he may trust him more, but he doesn't have the repetitions with him.
I haven't broken it out by half, and I should have, but maybe I'll look this up for tomorrow. Allen Robinson and Cecil both had 10 targets in the game. Allen Hurns only had the 3.
Mm-hmm.
He made the one big
catch.
Wasn't
on the field as much either, though.
No, true, but, I mean, that's all part of the process, you know, who the coaches have in the game. I would guess Allen Robinson for myself. What about you, Tony?
I'm probably leaning Robinson, but for me it's between Robinson and Hurns. And I think that Robinson is a more talented guy. I think Hurns is a more polished guy at this point, again, because he's had time on the field with those guys right now. But I really like what we've seen from Allen Robinson in the first 2 weeks. As far as his productivity, and you've been talking about it, Jeff, he's a little all over the place at times with what he's being assigned to do out there on the field, but he's still been productive despite those things.
Well, the guy that I want to see reach his potential is Marquise Lee. You know, I go back to, you know, training camp when he had the most dominant one-on-one, you know, drill that I've ever seen a wide receiver have. And I'm talking one-on-one where the wide receivers match up against the defensive backs, and it's quarterbacks and one-on-one, and it's let's go. Okay? It's one of the greatest drills to watch next to pass rush one-on-ones because it's man-on-man, and it's physical, and it's serious. And Marquise Lee destroyed the entire secondary. Alan Ball, Dwayne Gratz, Will Blackman, it didn't matter. Now you got to start to see that drill translate into game day to where, okay, I've got to line up. Okay, am I on the ball? Am I off the ball? What's the snap count? What's my route tree? Okay, what's the coverage? What's the adjustment? I mean, those are all the things a wide receiver has to think about before the ball is actually snapped, whereas in one-on-one, you're not thinking about that.
And in big part, that's why wide receivers typically struggle making the transition to the National Football League.
That's right.
I mean, and look, that's not – Marquise Lee may turn out to be a 10-year Pro Bowler. Go back and look, and I love the example of Reggie Wayne because he was catching passes from Peyton Manning. It took him pretty much till year 4
mm-hmm.
to really get running, you know, at a high level. So, you know, we get spoiled when we see A.J. Green and Julio Jones and some of these guys come into the National Football League and make that immediate impact. Not everybody's going to be like that, and those guys are typically, you know, top five
deep threat,
type
top
selection.
End, take the top off
and
the defense.
6 foot
kind of
three, and, yeah. and got the speed, got everything you're looking for in that regard. So the Tom Busch family of dealerships features, of course, Tom Busch Volkswagen, Tom Busch Mazda, Tom Busch BMW, and Tom Busch Mini. You can visit TomBusch.com for more information when you're in the market for a new or pre-owned vehicle, and follow them on Twitter at Tom Busch Motors as well. They bring you the fan feedback spotlight every day. Before we get out of here, LB, tonight, Helmets and Heels,
mm-hmm.
Toby Gerhart on location with
Number
you,
21
right?
with us, absolutely. We're going to have some fun talking to Toby. We all came up with questions that we're going to ask him, and they range as much as what was it like in the locker room when Chad turned the reins over to Blake to what does he have on his DVR and Tebow. So you'll certainly get to know Toby both, you know, around the team and then also off the field. And we are going to be at Black Sheep Restaurant in 5 Points, and it's going to be a blast. There's $3 intuition people's pale ales all night, so those are delicious. And then, of course, the staff will take care of everyone, and we're going to have so much fun. So, everyone, I hope to see you out there, and if not for us, at least for Toby.
How many ounces tonight, do you get right? for those three dollar beers?
The normal, 12 ounces.
Well, okay, well, I was hoping for 16.
Well, Jeff, for you, I'll make sure you get 16 ounces.
Well, I mean, we could probably get buy one, get one free, I have a feeling, if he shows up at Black Sheep.
Absolutely.
All right, we're not going to have any more time to get calls in today. Keep in mind, every Tuesday, we love taking calls with Jeff. I learn as much as anybody out there sitting here talking to him for 2 hours. Seems like 4 because you learn so much. But, Jeff, looking ahead to San Diego, I know you've done some prep work. By the way, let me run this down because somebody just sent a tweet a little while ago, said you should do an hour-long NFL matchup-style show every week, either on Jaguars.com or local television. You do some of that. It's specific to the Jags and their opponent
right.
In the matchup. But let's go through it. You're on with Sam Kavaris on Monday
nights.
Yeah, I
mean, my week, Monday Night Jaguars All Access with Sam Kavaris and a guest, and that is at 7 o'clock, half an hour show. And then Tuesdays with you. And then Thursdays we have the Gus Bradley radio show from 6 to 7 right here on 1010XL, and then also the Jaguars Radio Network. And then the second hour from 7 to 8, me, J.P. Shadrick, and Tony Baselli. And then we have Film Room Friday on Jaguars.com, which I go back the previous game and show you more than I can show you in the Monday show, which is a great education, I think, for a lot of people. Also, I do Inside the Jaguars with J.P. Shadrick on Jaguars.com every Monday. And then pregame show with Sam Kavaras at 11:30 every Sunday morning. Doesn't matter what time kickoff is at on Channel 4. And then the game day broadcast. And then we actually do a Jaguars Live presented by EverBank, a postgame report immediately after the game on Jaguars.com.
All right.
I think I got it all.
You got it. And that's a lot of opportunities for folks to check out Jeff Loggeman's work, which is outstanding. Give us a peek ahead, San Diego. Two or three things that if the Jags have success in these areas, they're going to be able to stay competitive with the Chargers.
I think the big challenge for them is to clean up their coverage, because Phillip Rivers might be the best at finding an open wide receiver on the field. You know, with what I'm talking about, with the Tom Brady's, the Peyton Manning's, the Drew Brees's. You know, perfect example is that 2 weeks ago, the San Diego Chargers, his favorite targets were Keenan Allen and Antonio Gates. You know, last week, his favorite target was Malcolm Floyd and Eddie Royal, and then also Ladarius Green, another tight end. You know, so Phillip Rivers is one of the best. And I think the greatest thing that Mike McCoy has done for Phillip Rivers is cut down on the mistakes and realize that because you are a veteran, you have to take advantage of your mental skill set, because Phillip Rivers doesn't have a great arm anymore. In fact, he kind of reminds me a little bit of Chad Pennington. I mean, not to that weak throw, but I mean, he's going down in that direction right now. So that's a challenge. The running game is not great for the San Diego Chargers. They lost Danny Woodhead.
Yep.
Huge loss. They haven't had Ryan Matthews, who's had an injury. Donald Brown got the start last week.
Yeah, 31 carries for 62 yards. So they got no push in the running game against Buffalo.
Well,
this
that's
week.
Buffalo Bills now.
That's, I mean,
we're
good,
talking about
good run defense. I got you.
I watch that film. Kyle Williams, Marcell Dareus, and Mario Williams, they can play. And I'm talking, they can play. They're really good. So it's not easy to get a lot of yards against that team.
What
defensively
else?
For the San Diego Chargers, they run a 3-4. Of course, it's Chuck Pagano's brother. John Pagano is the defensive coordinator there. He's a little bit more aggressive than Chuck Pagano. And the reason why is that they have three outstanding cornerbacks that allow them to play man-to-man. One of them is Sharice Wright. Brandon Flowers, remember who the Kansas City Chiefs signed in free agency and then let go?
Yes.
He's playing very well. And then they have a first-round draft pick and Jason Verrett. So they've got three corners that they feel confident about playing man-to-man in. So with that man-to-man coverage, they're going to bring some extra pressure.